Stream with Nimsy Insights. My name, as usual, doesn't change, is Tucker Johnson. I am one of the founders, one of the co-owners of Nimsy Insights. I'm also involved with Multilingual Magazine. Sometimes you see my face pop up over there on Multilingual's channel. I do these live streams. These are pop-up events. They are not announced. They are not advertised. The point is, keep an eye open. And you never know what's going to happen. And today we have a very special guest, Maria Scheibengraf. Forgive me if I'm not pronouncing that correctly.
No, that was spot on.
Awesome. And I invited you on the show today because you have a new book that you just came out. And I will turn it over to you and let you talk about it a little bit here. Why don't you take a minute and introduce yourself for those of you, or for those of the people watching that perhaps have not seen your presence online.
Yeah. Well, in the first place, thanks for having me. My name is Maria Scheibengraf. I'm the operations manager at Crizzle Translation Services, and I'm an English to Spanish translator and copywriter. I've launched my first book just 3 days ago, which is very exciting. It's a book on SEO translation. So I found there weren't any books on the matter. There are some courses and webinars and talks, but no books. So I thought this is my opportunity to put everything I know and everything I've learned so far in my 10 years of professional translation in a book. So yeah, that's what I did.
And you talk about that. There certainly are plenty of resources out there on SEO, but not a lot when we're talking about SEO translation, right? Have you found that as well?
Yeah, totally. I've found while there are courses on SEO translation per se, there are very few of them. And what you find a lot is hundreds and hundreds of SEO guides available online and SEO resources, but very few of them can be fully applied to SEO translation because there's a whole cultural and localization side to SEO translation that regular SEO guides don't touch on. Totally, yeah.
Interesting. Let's talk about that, shall we? But first, before we get into that, I queued up everything here, and you might not be able to see it, Maria. I think you can see it. Here we have the beautiful cover. First of all, who did the artwork on this cover?
This is gorgeous. A personal friend of mine who is an illustrator. That's supposed to be me on the cover.
I
look like an avatar, but I like it.
Well, yeah, I love it. When we first started Nimsy, we had avatars. Every new employee that we would onboard, we would create an avatar for. And
that's
so
brilliant.
Maybe that's why I like it. I really like the avatar mm-hmm. look for it. But over here, if you go to Crizzle Translations, you can find where you can get a copy of this right here. And it's got a nice little write-up here. So I encourage you to go over there. I'll put a link down in the description. I don't think I have it for the live stream, but I'll put a link down in the description so that you can go check it out for yourselves. But what I wanted to go through with you, maybe we can just walk through the book together because it's broken up into three main parts,
yeah,
right?
Exactly, yeah.
But we start out here with who needs SEO translation? Talk to me a little bit about that. Pretend I don't know anything about translation and pretend you don't have to pretend that hard, but pretend I don't know anything about SEO translation and tell me why is it important to me?
Okay. So this book is mainly targeted at translators who would like to specialize in SEO translation and start offering their services or to premium up what they can offer basically to either their current clients or new clients. Because SEO translation is a premium service and you charge a lot more than you do with regular translation. So I start by talking about who needs SEO translation because you're going to need to target them when you promote yourself. And what I say there is that international businesses that are operating at a global scale already know, those who are serious about their global marketing at least, they know that even if they localize their content and they translate their websites and their assets, if that content isn't discoverable in the target market, then there's no point in doing it in the first place. So they are very serious about it, and they are looking to invest in experts. The thing is that true experts are very few. There are translators who have knowledge of SEO, who have done some keyword localization projects, but they need actual specialist consultants to advise them on how to go about SEO in the target market. So I talk about that. I talk about the difference between multilingual SEO and SEO translation, which is not the same thing. Those terms I sometimes use interchangeably, but they are not. They're different. I talk about how SEO translation is just a chain in the multilingual SEO strategy, which goes beyond the translator's competencies. Multilingual SEO deals with things like product market fit, website hosting and domain structure, multilingual ads, and lots of things that translators don't need to concern themselves with. SEO translation is just a part of that. So I discuss the difference. I discuss all the things that you're able to bring to the table as an expert SEO translator and how you can benefit from that in terms of your client portfolio and how much your income goes up as a consequence. So that's the first part, the introduction. I can't hear you.
I said, is that all? And that's just the introduction.
Oh, yeah.
When we get into part one, we talk about SEO fundamentals. So we've covered some of this already. What is SEO? What qualifies someone as an SEO translation expert? Understanding search engines, critical SEO success factors.
The techie part, you know, because it's my belief, it's my firm belief that if you want to call yourself an SEO translation expert, it's not just enough to be an expert in the things that you will actually be working with hands-on. You need to know everything there is to know about SEO, even if you will never get to sit down and do it yourself, like the back end of it and the different names and the different parts of a search engine results page and stuff. So this first part is really techie. I've made a lot of effort to make it, to convey it in a clear way and straightforward and with lots of examples. And I also say, look, if this is going to bore the hell out of you, feel free to skip it. However, I recommend that you don't, because you might find some light bulb moments there, like the Core Web Vitals update that Google is introducing in May this year and how that affects any SEO strategy. Whatever the language and stuff.
I was going to say, what are some of the other, what do you call them, nuggets, vitals, what are some of the other pieces of information that you've found that was like, oh man, I wish someone had told me, I wish someone had written this in a book when I was first learning. You know, what are some of the tidbits that we can take away?
Well, what comes to, there's two things that come to mind. One of them is pretty silly, but I wish someone had... I wish someone had actually explained it to me, because it took a while to learn. When you do SEO research, keyword research, there are several tools that you can use. And I always found that search volumes differed completely, massively across tools. And I didn't understand why. And I didn't understand which one I should follow. Should I trust Google Keyword Planner or Uber Suggest or Moz or which one? So I touch on that. And the key part, I think, is the impact of culture. The impact of culture on search behavior. How culture determines, or at least conditions, the way that you enter your queries in Google, and how marketers should be able to decode that when crafting their SEO strategy in every market. And search intent as well, which is part of it.
Tell me about search intent. What is that for those of us that are not
right?
SEO
search
gurus?
Intent is what is the person, the user, trying to find or trying to do when entering this keyword in the search. Let me see if I can find an example so I don't mumble while I I want to give you a precise example of it. If I type on Google coffee store near me, for example, my intent is finding. It's navigational in the sense of I want to find a physical place, and I want Google to tell me, to show me, for example, a map of the place. Mm-hmm. Or if I type benefits of hiring a professional translator, my search intent is informational first, because I want to find out more information about it, but it might also be commercial investigation. I might be trying to learn or to research potential providers so that I will later on go there and buy from them. If I type download screen recorder, my intent is transactional. I just want to get to the page where I can go and download it. So there are different types of search intent. And the keywords that we work with, every keyword has a search intent to it. It's just sometimes a bit difficult to pinpoint it. And even more when culture is at play.
Yeah, I was going to say, so how do you go about translating that then, when culture is at play? And, you know, I don't want to spoil the end of your book, right? But where do you even start with that?
Like, right,
you come across
I describe
a keyword.
That in the, yeah, I describe that at the very end of the book when I touch on the SEO translation workflow. But basically, it starts with market research, which might be something that the client does for you, and they provide you with the insights, and you base your work on that. Or it might be something that you do yourself, and you offer it as an add-on to your services. On the book, I discuss Hoftady's cultural dimensions. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but he's Hoftady is a social psychologist who talks about how to categorize cultures, and he talks about five dimensions: the power distance, individualism, etc. So I recommend performing market research and an analysis of what your target culture is like in terms of those dimensions. For example, there are some cultures that are more individualistic than others. The UK, for example, is very individualistic. And there are some other cultures, like Latin American cultures, that are where societies are built around the family and the collective and the community. And those things impact the way people enter their search queries on Google and their intent as well. Individualistic cultures are less conformist. For example, they're not looking so much to conform to the mainstream and to the norm. So they're more open to innovative things and to experimenting. And they will be using keywords to reflect that when they search in Google. And marketers have the opportunity to tackle that with the strategy. And us as SEO translators can inform our clients about it as well. And even say, look, this is not going to work in the target culture, because you're using strategy that works for these types of cultures, and the one that you're approaching here now is a different one. It's not going to work. I suggest you do it this way, and you use these keywords and stuff. But I go through the whole workflow, starting from market research to the client brief, how to quote, how much to quote, how long each step might take you, everything that you need to go to you need to know to get started. I can't hear you.
That's because I keep muting myself. I'm sorry. Interesting. Like, I keep, at the risk of getting off subject, because I do want to just, like, go through your book here that I brought up on stream, go through the outline. But question, at what point in the process is it best to translate your keywords? Do you do that before anything else is done? Do you do that when you're creating the glossary? Do you do that before you create the glossary, after you create the glossary, during? Is it part of that process? Is it
so
better?
The process is complex because you're not working on your own when you're doing SEO translation. You are working as part of a team, your client's team, which involves from copywriters to the product team, which does development and design of the website or the app or whatever it is that you're translating. And only after they have completed their work do you start working on your SEO translation. And you start by doing the research, then picking up the best or the most representative keywords in the source language. These might be provided to you by your client, or you might need to pick them from the source text. Then you go on to brainstorm some good candidates to localize those keywords into the target language. And sometimes you will need to get really creative there, and you might have to transcreate the whole keyword entirely. Some other times the reference might be very cultural, so you will need to localize it with an equivalent. And once you have a few candidates for each of the source keywords, you then go on to your keyword research tool and you find out search volumes for each of them, and you choose and explain how you pick the best ones, a combination of keywords with high volume, some other more specific and more niched down keywords. You pick your target keywords, and then you start transcreating the source text with those keywords. However, you don't, what I say in the book is, don't translate for Google, translate for the users, because right. User experience is the cornerstone of SEO translation. If you get user experience right, that's 50% of SEO done, because Google rewards good user experience. So you transcreate with the user in mind, and then you can go back and optimize the target text with those target keywords that you've come up with during your research. And then, that goes back to the client.
And I get that a lot. So it sounds like there's a lot of concepts here that are just the same as regular SEO work, except there's a multilingual component to it. You're doing the search volume research, you're testing out different things. And so where does the scalability come in to SEO translation? Like how there's got to be some way where it's easier. It takes less time to translate a keyword than it does to come up with the original English keyword. Or is it more accurate to say that it takes just as much time to translate a keyword as it does to come up with the English, because you're essentially starting from scratch?
It's up to the client, really. So,
most things.
Yeah. So there's several ways to do it. They might come to you with a list of source language keywords in English, for example, and they might say, look, we want to stick to these keywords, but we want you to localize them. And then you might jump in and say, look, this one's not going to work. And you start with your consultancy, per se. Or they might come up to you and say, look, we need SEO research in the target market from scratch. Perform the keyword research yourself, come up with the keywords yourself around this and that topic, and then transcreate the text, the source text, with those keywords in mind. There's several ways to go about it, but it ultimately comes down to the client, but also to testing and the results, because when you're done with your translation, it doesn't end there. It goes back to the client, and there's testing that needs to be done in the same way that you carry out testing in the source market. And that will inform any tweaks that will be or adjustments that will be necessary down the line in your translation work as well. So it really is a thing of partnering up with your client and working like they would with a marketer. You become a marketer, basically, when you do SEO translation, and that's what I try to convey throughout the book.
Right. And that's kind of what I'm getting at, is you're not just a translator. Like your job is just as hard as the original copywriter or marketer that came up with the source text.
You're a blend of it all. You're a bit of a copywriter, a bit of a marketer, a bit of a translator. And that entitles you to charge a lot more than you would.
Talk to me about that. How do we do that? I'm not a translator, full disclosure, sorry. But for any translators out there, how do we learn this new skill, and how do we leverage this new skill to make ourselves, if you're a translator, in more higher demand? How do I communicate this expertise to potential clients and convince them to give me money for my services?
The first thing, of course, is get trained up. This book might help. So learn everything there is to know about SEO, learn everything there is to know about market research, and in particular, the culture into which you are working, your mother language or whatever it's like. I translate into Spanish, into Latin American Spanish, and I know Latin America inside out as a result of that. So every translator, we have to pick what's relevant to them. And then, I lost track of what I was saying. Right.
Oh, that's just, I do that all the time.
I was thinking about Latin America and how much I miss traveling, and I lost track of it. That I was saying that, first you need to train up, and then as with everything, as you niche down, as you become a specialist and expert in a certain field, you are entitled to offer that service as a premium service, because there aren't many more like you who will be able to offer what you do offer. And I explain how to quote for it, how much is the average price per for the service in Europe, whether it's better to do it on an hourly rate or a project flat fee, how long every step of the process will likely take you when you're starting out and as you get more experienced. So I go through that as well at the end of the book.
Nice. I'll take myself off mute this time. See, the difference is I can just, if I lose my train of thought, all I have to do is ask you a question, and then I can just let you talk for a couple minutes. Let's go back to the outline here. Part two, the five SEO translation pillars. I'll let you list. All right, pop quiz. Can you list your own translation pillars? I ask this because if someone asks me to like list something from my book, I can't.
The only reason I can is because I've been working on this for the past 2 months, basically every day. I started this book 9 months ago, but the last 2 months, I basically don't want to see this book again ever. I'm just so tired of. But yeah, no. The impact of culture, like I mentioned, user experience, the role of copywriting, localization and transcreation for SEO translation, local competitor analysis and testing. Those are the five pillars. I place a lot of emphasis in the first three. When it comes to local competitor analysis, I provide a template, a report template from a real case one, like one that we produced for one of our clients, that you can, or whoever's reading the book, can take as an example and inspiration. And then testing is a bit of a brief section about how important it is for SEO translation as well as it is in the source market.
That's interesting. I rarely see this word local, and especially in the context of like local competitors in the language services industry, because we are such a global industry and you're competing with everybody. But you know, why is it important for your SEO transcreation to be local?
First of all, there's a reason we talk about localization all the time.
That's like the one context I do see the word local, right? Like we literally work in the localization industry. So yeah,
exactly. And before I talk about local competitor analysis, I discuss that localization can have two meanings. I don't want to give too much away, but I talk of LOC1 and LOC2 as two acronyms to refer to different things that are usually named localization in our industry. And then I move on to local competitor analysis. I talk about local, even though, you know, we're about...
First of all, I will just back you up here and I'll say that, in my opinion, localization is a word that we misuse and abuse in our industry. Yeah. And 99% of the time when someone in the localization industry talks about localization, what they really mean is translation. Period.
Yeah.
They just mean translation. Yeah. Like the word localization has lost all meaning. And it kind of irritates me because maybe there was a time when it meant something, but I can't remember when that was.
Totally.
So,
and it's shifted and it's changed so much that it now can mean lots of different things. And it gets really confusing for someone who's starting out in the field. So I address that and I subdivide the term localization into two different axes, if you want, to make it clearer. And then when I move into local competitor analysis, what I claim basically is that even though we're talking about a global product, you still need successful market penetration and you need to sound local for that.
Okay.
And you need to adapt the copy, the marketing strategy, and sometimes the product itself to local preferences. And that requires that you look at what local businesses are doing because you're going to be competing
against
them.
By businesses, you mean other marketing shops, other SEO shops, other agencies?
Other businesses in the industry, in your client's industry. Yeah, or with a product or a service
that
competes with your client's industry
at
a local level.
So that's why I'm so lost, because this whole time I've been misunderstanding this local competitor analysis. I thought you were talking about like other linguists, like your competition.
No.
That's why I was intrigued by it, because I was like, that seems kind of funny, because we're not really an industry that's known for our competition, our cutthroat competition.
Yeah, no, I mean your client's competition
got
in terms of product or service in the target market.
Got it. Tell me a little bit about, though, you know, working for different clients. What recommendations do you have for marketing translators, SEO translators that are working with LSP clients so they don't actually get the benefit of talking directly to the end clients? What are your thoughts on that?
There are benefits and there are disadvantages. In terms of benefits, there's a pile of things that you don't have to worry about when you're working with an agency, which comes in really handy and comfortable. When I will give a very practical example. When I gave birth last year, I've got a one-year-old baby, and I found it a lot easier to work with agency clients than with direct clients during those first months, because all I had to do was focus on getting the text translated or localized, transcreated, whatever, the research done. I sent it back and I forgot about it. They did testing, they did consultancy, market research, everything else was on the agency. So that's the benefit side of things. You can just focus on the linguistic aspect of your work. Working with direct clients has another set of benefits, financial mainly.
Sure. It's not insignificant, right? It's worth
not insignificant, exactly. And also you get to do everything on your own terms. I mean, you agree with the client on lots of things, but also you get to call the shots because you're the expert they are coming to for advice or consultancy. So your role there is very, very important for their strategy as well. And you're not so much an anonymous resource in a database. You're key to their marketing, and that comes with lots of benefits as well. So it depends on what I like. A combination of both types of clients.
Nice. Yeah, I like to ask. I like to talk to translators about that, because sometimes I run across strong opinions one way or the other.
Yeah.
And I think this is one of the first time. Now, granted, I'm not a translator, right? So I'm a big part of those communities, but I don't hear that too often, like the nice balance of having multiple clients, because to me, that's one of the advantages of being a freelancer, being in business for yourself, being a contractor, is getting to pick who you work with and who you don't work with is a big thing. And hey, I've been on the receiving end of that as a project manager sometimes, and some translator just doesn't want to work with us. And
that's actually my definition of success. I've been asked, how do you define success as a freelance translator? When you get to the point where you can choose who not to work with.
Amen. Amen. That is beautiful. Let's move on to part three. We're at the bottom here. Before we hit the paywall.
Yeah, but I've touched on that as well. It's where I talk about the workflow. So I've left that for the end.
Yeah, this is cat tools. We haven't talked about cat tools yet, though, right?
No, we haven't.
Let's talk about the role of technology in SEO translation or in marketing translation in general. I certainly have my thoughts on it. To TM or not to TM? That is the question, right?
I talk about that there, so I don't want to give too much away. However, you can imagine from my general attitude, I find pros and cons to the use of cat tools and certain features within cat tools that might speed up your work, especially in terms of consistency when pairing up source keywords to target keywords and stuff. But I do make a point about translation memories in marketing, and I don't want to give it away, though. You have to read the book.
Have to read the book. Well, where can we get a book? Here's your opportunity, because I'm sure there's plenty of this video. We're going live right now. I don't think we have anybody in the comments. Let's see that new. But hey, if you're watching live right now and you have some questions for Maria, drop them in the comments and we can take
Please,
a look at
those. I'll get in touch with you as well later. That's fine. That's absolutely fine with me. If you go on our website, Crizol, that's spelled Crizol, CrizolTranslations.com. On the homepage, you'll find
that right
pop-up
there.
First. Yeah, and then if you close the pop-up on the homepage as well, just below the header, there's a link to where you can purchase the book. Oh,
there we go. Look at this. I love the fact that you have real people on your homepage, by the way.
Yeah, I'm the one on the right.
Yeah, one of my biggest pet peeves is stock images on homepages. Come on, guys. If you're an LSP marketing manager out there and you have stock images on your homepage, talk to me. We'll set you up.
That's how we market ourselves, because we say we're not a faceless company. It's just a team of four, and the sweet spot between a freelancer and an agency, really, just a team of freelancers, a boutique team. So that's why our face is there on the header. I make that point as well.
I love that. I absolutely love that. So here, Crizol, CrizolTranslations.com. It's right here on the homepage. Download the ebook here if you're a translator that wants to get your hands on a copy. It's available right here, just a couple clicks away. If you are a marketing manager or a client looking to go into new markets and pursue a strategy of findability, SEO first strategy, get in contact. I'm assuming info@crizoltranslations.com is the number to reach out to. Any other shameless plugs, closing thoughts, lessons learned, morals of the story before we
lessons
here?
Learned. A personal one. I've always been a very confident person, and yet this is my first book. And I was scared to death to publish it. I just kept putting it off. I was so scared to just launch it. So my lesson learned is that we constantly need to step out of our comfort zone, constantly. Even when we think it comes natural to us, it doesn't to anyone. So that's my lesson, and I hope to hear people's feedback. The feedback we've been getting so far has been amazing, which is really reassuring. But yeah, other than that, thanks so much for the space and for letting me discuss it.
Excellent. Congratulations again. And I would not have known that you were feeling trepidation about publishing this book. It looks like you're the expert. You're owning this space. I love that. Keep doing it. And one thing that I always say, because I have one book too, and a second one that has been sitting gathering dust for a long time because I'm not publishing it, right?
And
yeah, the difference between an author and an aspiring author is sitting down and writing. That's it.
Totally.
And I have mad respect for anyone that has the discipline to sit down and write a book. And that's why I reached out to you. I've never met you before. This is literally the first time that we've spoken, right?
Yeah.
I just saw that you wrote a book. It impressed the shit out of me. So I pinged you on LinkedIn and said, hey, come talk about it.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. It's great to get messages from people saying, yeah, well done, would you like to talk about it? It feels really nice and warming, heartwarming.
Well, good. I hope you get a lot more after that. So just to end it up here, I'll just do a quick recap. Thank you to NIMSY Insights for letting us use their streaming channels. Once again, my name is Tucker Johnson. I am one of the co-founders over here at NIMSY Insights. We do market research and consulting focusing primarily, but not exclusively, on the language services industry. We help clients go global. And one of the ways that we do that is by offering services, consulting about things like SEO. And we have a large network of people that we work with, much like Maria here. Reach out to us, reach out to Maria if you have any questions. And with that, we'll see you next time. Subscribe to NIMSY so you see the next pop-up. Yes, thank you very much, Maria. Let's give you a round of applause because I have a button for that.
I love that.
And
thank you. Have a lovely day. Bye.